right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, August 20th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 80 degrees here in upstate New York. Partly cloudy, and it looks like it is about to pour. But hey, at least it is still summer. Summer is about ready to come to an end here, so I'm not looking forward to the snow, which is inevitable here. Hopefully it holds off until November. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Project BioShield, DOD, CDC, Big Pharma Collusion, and we took a look at all kinds of different things that really made you go, basically how the entire vaccination program originated with the Department of Defense as part of the historical United States bio warfare program, 1972, when I almost said Lincoln, Nixon inked that Geneva Act. God, you know, that really pisses me off that every single day, just about in the last 2 weeks, I mention that. And is it here? I'm not going to stop the show. Damn. All right, by tomorrow, I promise I'll have the actual name of whatever that thing was he inked. But they got rid of, they made it illegal to make biological or chemical weapons. But we withheld the right to make vaccines as part of and an extension of that program. We also took a look at some of the things. We looked at the swine flu. We looked at, I don't know if we looked at bird flu during the show, but we most certainly looked at bird flu after the show. Looks like they've been having drills in Maine between the police and some of the reserves on how to react to a bird flu outbreak. The USDA is also seeking proposals for the production of a bird flu vaccine. You knew that was coming. Farmers are screaming that if they vaccinate all the birds, you know, the farmers always knew about vaccine shedding. They're like, well, you vaccinate all the birds, they're going to be shedding that vaccine, and you're going to get all my healthy birds who hadn't gotten the vaccination yet sick. So who knows where that's going to go. We also took a look at one of the George Bush edicts called Project BioShield, and that's kind of where I want to get back to today. Oh, I know what else we saw was Bill Posey, Representative Bill Posey out of Florida, going up in front of Congress and bringing testimony and documents from a CDC whistleblower to the attention of Congress, making it part of the official record, showing that the CDC knew about the MMR vaccine and an autism link, but they destroyed the documents. Well, thank God there was a whistleblower who thought of FOIA and the Department of Justice and kept hard copies of everything. So that is in the forefront. It really is disturbing to me that that original Wakefield Lancet study is the one that all of the pro-vacciners have pointed to, showing that it was debunked. The connection between MMR and autism was debunked by the research in the CDC and from this Bill Posey testimony. Yeah, it was debunked because they destroyed all the evidence. So it makes you not trust anything that is coming out of these clowns. All right. So let's take a look at Project BioShield. So we started looking at the original act of 2004 yesterday, and we kind of tied it into this whole new national bioeconomy blueprint that they've been talking about. The White House inked that. This is the new thing, all this new technology that's going to fuel our future. Thank goodness we have nanotech and biotech, and it's going to give us all jobs. Well, that original Project BioShield Act went from 2004 to 2014. It allowed them to stockpile, and we read that yesterday. There were all kinds of untested on human vaccinations sitting in the stockpile only to be used in the case of an emergency. that the federal government had spent billions of dollars to stockpile. That expired in 2014. Well, guess what? June 18th, 2014, the Project BioShield Act issues for the 113th Congress. Yes. In summary, in 2004, Congress passed the Project BioShield Act to provide the federal government with new authorities related to the development, procurement, and use of medical countermeasures against chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear terrorism agents. However, the government still lacks countermeasures on many of the and the chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear has a little happy acronym of CBRN. However, the government still lacks countermeasures against many of the CBRN terrorism agents determined by the government to pose the greatest threat. Well, isn't that comforting after billions of dollars spent and you still don't have countermeasures against many of the worst terrorism agents out there? Congress is likely to consider whether these modifications of these authorities or new authorities would help address the remaining gaps. Yeah, like, oh, how about the Vaccinate All Americans Healthy 2020 Act, Healthy People 2020 Act? The authority, generally referred to as Project BioShield, allows the government to guarantee a market for chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear medical countermeasures. It allows the government to guarantee a market for big pharma to develop these mad science gone mad drugs. How nice is that? Under the provision, the Secretary of Health and Human Services may obligate funds, obligate like an obligation, to purchase countermeasures that still need up to, what, 10 more years of development. Ding, ding, there you go. That's where all this venture capital is coming from, for all of these biopharma mad science companies to develop all these crazy new vaccines. Can you say Ebola RNA virus? RNA virus, RNA vaccine? Sorry, it's Thursday. Long week, guys. School is in the sights. So this is like the last race up to then. I'm burning the candle at every direction here. Anyway, back to the story. So Health and Human Services may obligate funds to purchase countermeasures that still need up to 10 more years of development. Since 2004... Health and Human Services has obligated approximately $3.309 billion to guarantee a government market for countermeasures against anthrax, smallpox, botulism, radiation, and nerve agents. So where's all the radiation remediation? Pretty interesting. I know that there was a project, I had mentioned this a long time ago, back probably 3 or 4 years ago. I had gotten a press release when I was still subscribed and caring about any of that stuff from Roswell Park Cancer Institute, stating that they had received money from DARPA to work on a radiation pill, an anti-radiation pill, I would say. And they were going to test it on cancer patients receiving chemotherapy. Again, the most vulnerable, the ones who will say, I have no other choice, test your newfangled medicine on me. They're going to test it on cancer patients dying, getting chemotherapy at Roswell Park Cancer Institute. And a year later, when I went to go find that press release because I had mentioned it on the air, guess what? It wasn't there anymore. Of course it wasn't. Anyway, and I've never heard another thing about it. Have you? I know I haven't. Where's all the anti-radiation drugs that people in California maybe should be taking? There was actually, speaking of radiation, there was a clip that came out yesterday. I think it came out of Press TV, that there are over 6 million residents right now on the West Coast that are drinking uranium-tainted water. And that is in California as well as in some of the other southwestern states because of the mining and stuff going on down there. And, of course, now they're trying to open a mine that was approved in the 80s, I believe, just outside the Grand Canyon. They're even the EPA is grandfathering it. There have been lawsuits that have kind of kept it to this point closed, so they were never able to open, and now they just kind of gave it the blessing, and they are accepting the environmental study that was originally done in the 80s. And of course, all the Native Americans who own and live, who own land down there and live in that area, as well as a lot of the environmental groups, are screaming to high heaven, why on earth would you open a uranium mining facility? I think it was like just 3 miles outside of Grand Canyon. I had a couple stories on that on my Fukushima facts page. But now they're going to sue again. So hopefully that just never opens. I mean, what a bunch of lunatics these people are. Yeah, we need another uranium factory. You know, and one of the stories it talked about, like back when they originally were doing uranium mining years ago, many moons ago, and how much contamination there was and how it's taken like close to a generation or more to even get it to the point where it's partially cleaned up. So let's open another mine. Right at one of the nation's most favorite landmarks, natural wonders of the world. Let's let them uranium mine. All right, anyway, let's get back to Project BioShield. This is the summary of the 2014 Act. Anyway, so we are obligated. The Health and Human Services has obligated taxpayer dollars in the sums of $3.309 billion to guarantee a government market for countermeasures against anthrax. And like we said yesterday, and I have a couple good videos, so maybe we'll play these today. There was an update to the DOD spreading anthrax across the planet here over the last 10 years. Smallpox, botulism, radiation, and nerve agents. All right. Another provision of the Project BioShield Act established a process through which the Health and Human Services Secretary may temporarily allow the emergency use of countermeasures that completely lack Food and Drug Administration approval. So this isn't even fast-tracking, baby. This is no approval whatsoever of mad science gone mad drugs to be used forcibly under the state of national emergency on you, me, and our kids. Now, how on earth did that get through? Why would we be putting stuff that hasn't been tested 10 years out in development, and we're buying it as it's trickling in, putting it in the stockpile? Why on earth would we? I saw yesterday when we were reading that original 2004 document, there were 3 or 4 different anthrax vaccines that it sounded like, all from some sort of genomics companies by the names of them. And when we went through that FEMA training in 2006, they were giving us, they weren't giving us, we were being trained to give out the antibiotic, whatever that antibiotic, I was talking about this yesterday, the one that hurts the Achilles tendon, the one that you really don't ever want to take, but it kills anthrax. And if you had to, well, at least it's been tested. But they were giving antibiotics. They were training us to give out antibiotics, not injections that were never tested on humans because, oh, what ethics? They've only been tested in animals. But in the case of an emergency, we could pull out all stops and inject millions of people in one fell swoop. Leave it to good old George Bush to come up with that one. I bet he invested well in biopharma. So anyway, they established a process through Project BioShield through which the Health and Human Services Secretary may temporarily allow the emergency use of countermeasures that lack Food and Drug Administration approval. The Health and Human Services has used this authority to allow the emergency use of unapproved products several times. Really? Well, I sure hope they talk about that. The Department of Homeland Security Appropriations Act of 2004 advance appropriated $5.593 billion to acquire chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear countermeasures through Project BioShield between the fiscal year 2004 and 2013. Subsequent Congresses rescinded or transferred $2.291 billion, more than one-third, from this advanced appropriation, and transfers from this account supported the CBRN Medical Countermeasures Advanced Development Pandemic Influenza Preparedness and Response. I wonder if they're using that $2.91 billion right now in the training that they're doing up in Maine for bird flu pandemic and for basic biomedical research. The Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2014, so that must consolidate Department of Homeland Security and Health and Human Services use of Project BioShield. I mean, what? Listen to this. This is just unbelievable. The Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2014 provides an additional $255 million for Project BioShield procurements to remain available until expended. So it never expires, that money sitting there in a pot. And for fiscal year 2015, the president is requesting an additional $415 million. It's just amazing how many millions and billions of dollars we have to just go throwing around like it's chump change. Since the passage of the BioShield Act, Congress has considered additional measures to further encourage countermeasure development. Yeah. It's just amazing, too. We looked at yesterday. I just saw a video this morning. There's actually another plague case now. But it's amazing how all of these never before seen or first time in 100 years after we eradicated something, that all these diseases are popping back up like whack-a-mole. I think they're really setting us up, guys. I really, really do. When you look at all these lunatics that are running the asylum and how many of these drugs are sitting in phase two trials because of ethics, because they could never test them on humans in case, unless there was a case of an emergency where any and all safety, even if there was, and we know they're not safe to begin with, but they don't have to publish any information or show any type of vaccine adverse reaction reporting or pay any type of lawsuit or payout if you happen to be the one or two lucky people in the United States of America who can go up in front of the vaccine board and prove that your child has been injured. There won't be any of that once they decide that it's an emergency and it's for your own good. Anyway, since the passage of the BioShield Act, Congress has considered additional measures to further encourage countermeasure development. The pandemic, we're going to have to look this one up. The Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act created the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. We mentioned them yesterday. That was good old BARDA, which we'll need to dig into as well. And they are part of the Health and Human Services and modified the Project BioShield procurement process. Among other duties, BARDA oversees all of HHS's Project BioShield procurements. The Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Reauthorization Act authorized Project BioShield appropriations of $2.8 billion between fiscal year 2014 and fiscal year 2018. So we got $2.8 billion to fight pandemics with and create new crazy vaccines full of nanotechnology and RNA technology. And then once the emergency is declared, they can test it on all of us. The 113th Congress may also consider modifying the amount and manner by which it funds Project BioShield procurements. Additionally, what is that going to be, a line item tax on your paycheck? Just like, you know, I've talked about this before. Phone bills, if any type of utility run by the government is an example of just how off the rails they are, the phone company. I still have a landline, and I know this is totally off topic, but just talking about other ways in which they're going to fund some of their national programs. I have a landline, and the only reason I have a landline is because I have a kid, and I always thought if there really was an emergency where I had to call 911 because my kid, you know, fell and cracked her head open, I really want them to know exactly where I am if I have to call. And so I got the basic, whatever the absolute basic was. I don't even have long distance. It's just a local number, so I can dial 911, and that was a flat rate of $19.99 a month. I looked at that bill. The taxes have gone up again. I looked at that bill. It's now $32. $19.99 is what I pay for my service, and the additional $12. So there's 12 additional dollars on top of 20 that are all taxes, state and federal. And the feds, they're for their, I think it's the FCC line charge. The feds get like $4.50 in a tax every month just for the benefit of having a landline. And on a $20 bill, you pay an additional $12 tax? What? It's just absolutely incredible. All right. Anyway. Additionally, Congress may consider whether Health and Human Services is optimally using its chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear-related authorities to close remaining countermeasure gaps and appropriately planning for long-term costs associated with maintaining a countermeasure stockpile. I mean, honestly, if then we turn around and we look at the Healthy People 2020 Act and how, you know, vaccines are going to keep us safe from future pandemics, we can see where this is all coming from. All right, let's take a look at a little bit more. I don't know. I don't want to read about the payments. Let's look at the material threat determinations. Project BioShield contracts are only available for products designed for use against chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear agents that the Department of Homeland Security has determined to pose a, quote, material threat against the United States population sufficient to affect what? Oh, national security. Everything is done in the name of national security. This determination is distinct from other periodic Department of Homeland Security CBRN-related risk assessment threats, such as the biological terrorism risk assessment. So it's totally separate. I guess there's a whole nother division for that. This next little table here lists the CBRN agents that the Department of Homeland Security has determined to pose a material threat. So look out, people. The number one agent, hydrogen cyanide, potassium cyanide, and sodium cyanide. I wonder how the Chinese people feel about that in Tianjin. Number two, volatile nerve agents. Well, I wonder how the people of Syria feel about that, ISIS. And number three, Bacillus anthraxis and multi-drug resistant Bacillus anthraxis. Good old anthrax. Number four, and I've never heard of this one, Burkholdia mali, The disease is called glanders. How many outbreaks of glanders have you heard of? I don't know. It's probably some horrible disease, though, so I shouldn't joke about it. Number five, Burkholderia pseudomallei, which is melidiosis. Never heard of that one either. Number six, botulism toxins. Of course, that's botulism, as long as you're not getting Botox. Number seven, Ebola. Whoop-a-da-boo. Yes, good old Ebola. That was number seven on the list. Thank goodness they didn't start with cyanide. Number eight, Francisella tularensis, which is tularemia. I've heard of that. I have no idea what it is. Number eight, Junin virus. That's a hemorrhagic fever. Number nine, Marburg virus. Well, we've heard of that one. That's another hemorrhagic fever. Number 10, Rickettsia prowlicki. Sounds like a Polish name, which is more affectionately known as typhus. Number whatever this is, 11 or whatever, 12, variola virus, which is smallpox. And the very last is Yersinia pestis, which is plague. So how interesting, they've closed down Yellowstone campgrounds for plague right now. Under Project BioShield, HHS, Health and Human Services, may purchase unapproved and unlicensed countermeasures, and it requires the HHS Secretary to determine that sufficient and satisfactory clinical experience or research data support a reasonable conclusion. Oh, yes. A reasonable conclusion that the countermeasures will qualify for approval or licensing within 10 years. Project BioShield contracts may specify larger awards for approved products than unapproved products. HHS used Project BioShield to acquire unapproved countermeasures right now sitting in the stockpiles for anthrax, smallpox, and botulism toxin. Oh, and here's this whole section on emergency use of unapproved products. Let's read this too. The FDA designed its standard approval and licensing process to protect people from infective or dangerous treatments. But what they don't tell you is about all of the research published in medical journals that has come out after the fact to either be untrue or incorrect or needing correction that the FDA never required red actions or corrections for. So there's all kinds of fraudulent research out there that's already been published that hasn't been corrected. So I really trust the FDA. Project BioShield Act allows the Health and Human HHS, whatever this stands for, Health and Human Science, wait, HHS, I don't know, whatever, the HHS Secretary to temporarily allow the use of medical products that the FDA has not approved or licensed. And this authority is not limited to products acquired through Project BioShield. Oh my God. Oh, we just allow anything at any time. Get rid of all the food labeling too. Don't worry about it. Especially if we merge the FDA and the USDA. And hey, we already told you we don't have enough investigators to make sure your food is safe. We're going to let the country of origin tell us it's safe before they ship it in. This is just unbelievable. Nobody is keeping us safe. Nobody. Billions, bazillions, not just billions, bazillions of dollars being spent for every one of these asshole agencies loaded with a bunch of bureaucrats who are all just worried about making money in the dangling carrot, butt slapping and palm rubbing their buddies. It's not about keeping your kid safe. And guess what? Now we're going to hold your kid down and we're going to force them to take all these newfangled RNAi and nanotech vaccines. And oh, don't you worry about it, adults in the United States, because you're not too far behind with the Healthy People 2020 Act. Health and Human Services, that's what HHS stands for. The Project BioShield Act allows the Health and Human Services Secretary to temporarily allow the use of medical products that the FDA has not approved or licensed. And this authority is not limited to products acquired through Project BioShield. These allowances are known as emergency use authorizations. And the Health and Human Services Secretary may issue emergency use authorizations during a military, domestic, or public health emergency, significant potential emergency, or following the identification of a threat sufficient to affect national security. Oh my God. Talk about being as vague can be, to leave every single loophole open for them very soon here, guys. They said they've used that authority already a few times. But hey, what is it going to take for them to go, oh, this is a potential security threat. We need to vaccinate everyone. And here comes martial law. I mean, way back, way, way, way back, we looked at the civilian internee manual that was put out in the case of some, of course, huge natural disaster or pandemic or whatever, where they would have to move everyone into these internment camps for their own safety. And if you weren't vaccinated, it specifically stated in there that you were a threat to the herd. That's that whole herd mentality with vaccines. And they literally will be able to force you and force your children to be vaccinated to protect the herd. This is just so unbelievably uncool. Beyond uncool. It is evil, devious. This is all part of an orchestrated plan. I had a conversation with a friend last night who always plays devil's advocate, and it's not to just play devil's advocate. I think he truly is the devil's advocate when it comes to anything that I have an idea on. It's always completely 100% opposite. And this vaccine debate was going on, which, of course, gave me a major headache. But I'm going to tell you, this is evil. This is, you know, I don't care how much you want to tell me it's for my own safety. It should still be my own decision. And let me make the determination whether or not I want to gamble, roll that dice, and hope I don't get snake eyes when I take that unapproved mad science gone mad vaccination. All right, so anyway, I'm going to read that statement one more time. The HHS secretary may issue an emergency use authorization during a military, domestic, or public health emergency, significant potential emergency. Sorry, significant. What the frick is a potential emergency? Or following the identification of a material threat sufficient to affect national security. Well, what's that? Is that mice chewing the power lines in the nuclear reactors? I mean, come on. To exercise this authority, the HHS secretary must conclude that, oh, here we go. So here's where the determinations come in. One, the agent for which the countermeasure is designed can cause serious or life-threatening disease. Okay. Number two, the product may reasonably, here we go again, reasonably be believed to be effective in detecting, diagnosing, treating, or preventing the disease. Number three, so it should work. Number three, the known and potential benefits of the product, and oh, you gotta love this one, outweigh its known and potential risks. That is the stock argument that I get anytime I go head to head with somebody who just doesn't want to believe how insane and insidious this is. Number four, there is no adequate alternative to the product and it is approved and available. And number five, any other criteria prescribed in regulation are met. So, wow, if it could be any bigger than that. Two, No, the HHS secretary has issued several emergency use authorizations. Two emergency use authorizations related to CBRN agents remain active. One permits the distribution of antibiotic kits containing doxycycline to U.S. Postal Service employees volunteering in the National Postal Model Emergency Countermeasure Distribution Program. And yes, that was part of this FEMA thing that we were training for, but it wasn't doxycycline that they were giving out. It was that other, God, I wish I could remember. Hold on. Anthrax. Now, of course, watch, my computer's going to not stop working. Antibiotic treatment. There we go. Penicillin, doxycycline, and Cipro. So maybe it was Cipro. Cipro. I thought it was that other one. They'll use Cipro as well to treat Lyme disease. Yeah, maybe it was Cipro. I don't remember doxycycline, though, ever being mentioned. And yeah, that's what they decided to do. They were going to give it to the post office, since the post office already knew where each and every one of us lived. And the post office wasn't stopped through rain, snow, hail. They delivered the mail 6 out of 7 days a week. They were going to allow the post office to deliver to your home antibiotics as a countermeasure against bioterror. And I thought one of the things we had just talked about in chat the other day, and we had read a story originally when it first came out, the first test with the Amazon delivery drones was just happening after it had been approved by the FAA to allow them to fly their drones in U.S. airspace. And what did they do for the first test? Yes. They used Amazon delivery drones in their first beta test to deliver vaccines. So I bet you the post office in the next revision of this, the post office will be scribbled out with a marker and they'll have Amazon delivering your bioterror countermeasures via drones. Oh, God. The other CBRN-related active permits distributing doxycycline before an emergency and its mass dispensing without a prescription during an emergency to prevent inhalational anthrax. Any of the active ones related to the CBRN threats allow the use of diagnostic tests for the naturally occurring diseases, H7N9 influenza, and the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus. Well, I thought MERS came from camels. I don't have too many camels here, so I'm not too worried about MERS. Oh, do we continue with this? I don't know. We went through a lot of the original one in 2004. I want to see what they changed here. Well, I'm not going to read any more of this. We can maybe, it started to get a little boring for me. Let's see what else we can find, because there was something I wanted to bring up. Yeah, I started digging into the CDC last night, because I was just kind of curious. So the CDC has been involved in a lot of things. We also found out, I had mentioned they'd been up in front of Congress for their complete lack of accountability with not only anthrax, but smallpox and other things. They're finding them sitting on top of filing cabinets, right? People having access to, like, high-level security areas where they shouldn't have access to, and they weren't properly using protocols. And there was all kinds of investigations. I didn't really see too much happen as a result of that. We also found out that Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg that we talked about yesterday, he was at one of the boards in Europe, the medical boards, and he was crying foul during the 2009 quote-unquote swine flu pandemic, stating that it was manufactured, the World Health Organization was in the middle of it, as well as the CDC, and it was all about, not your safety and mine, it was all about selling vaccines. Actually, let's listen to that, because I found an interview with Dr. Wodarg yesterday. I just have to, I don't remember my Skype. Let's pull myself in here. Hopefully it'll ringy dingy. There we go. Sorry, by the time it gets to be Thursday, I'm already so burned out. It's been a long week. All right, this is called Pharma Flu Fraud.
Come would there be for the drug companies at the center of the investigation? To discuss this, we're now joined live by Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, who initiated this probe. Dr. Wodarg, you state that drug firms organized a campaign of panic over pandemic fears when one was not really evident. What made you...
Now, here's the thing. So we were reading this Project BioShield and all these bazillions of dollars that are earmarked for the development of new vaccinations in the name of national security. And if they declare that there is a threat and we or even a thought of a threat, that they can use these emergency measures to start stabbing us with untested medications. And lo and behold, some doctor steps out of the shadows and says, yes, that's exactly what they're doing. They're manufacturing fear in order to sell vaccines.
Come to this conclusion.
We didn't judge like this, but I think we see the necessity that we have to do some investigations in the Council of Europe to reinstall the trust and the reliability of such very important organizations like the WHO. And I think we have seen that there are many signs that there is a close cooperation between pharmaceutical companies and the WHO. Perhaps something is necessary, but we have to find out whether there was pressure or whether there was money going and giving incentives for WHO to have this pandemic declared in April or May last year. So it was a false alarm, this is sure, and it's very costly and it hurts a lot of people unnecessarily.
Okay, so you are suggesting that there's some sort of collaboration there between the WHO and these big pharma giants. Other than the pharmaceutical companies, is it possible that people in the WHO are benefiting as well?
I don't know how much money there is and how much influence there is. This is the topic we have to investigate on. We want to find the truth. We don't want to stay there with some conspiracy theories or with some claims, but we have to find out what is the truth. So this is why we cannot say anything concrete now. We want to investigate.
Who is involved in the probe and what obstacles could the investigators stumble into?
There will be the parliamentarians of all national delegations in the Council of Europe, in the Parliamentary Assembly. So what we shall do is we shall foster and we shall qualify the discussion about this topic in all national parliaments. And there are already some parliaments, like in the French one, for instance, where there will be a national debate on this and where will be investigations how the government in France reacted. And I know that the problem is quite differently handled in Poland or in Germany. So we have national debates. And what we do is we give a platform for exchange of experience and we do investigations to feed this discussion and to give informations, reliable informations on the truth.
You have said that millions of people have now been vaccinated with products with inherent possible health risks. Can we expect a growing number of lawsuits against the pharmaceutical giants?
Ding, ding. There was a big lawsuit, a payout, actually, in regards to the swine flu vaccination that I just saw yesterday. I thought we read part of it. I think it was $63 million that GlaxoSmithKline has been ordered in the UK for payouts for damages against civilians that were injected with that vaccination, and now they're demanding that the UK government cough up that money to pay for the lawsuits.
Yeah, because this is if you have a pandemic, if you really have a very, very urgent situation, you do other things than with a normal flu. And because there was this alarm of a pandemic, They were allowed, the pharmaceutical companies and the states started producing urgent drugs. This is to say that the reliability of the drugs and the quality of the drugs is not the same and is not as well tested as normal drugs where you have time to do it. And
ding, ding.
And this gives them a surplus of risks. This is another risk which people have to stay to stand. And so we shall find out whether this there is responsible action by WHO or not. And if there is something done unnecessarily, those who suffer from it, they will try to get their rights. And I don't know. This will be on the national level, those claims. And it may be very different from country to country.
Dr. Wolfgang Vodag from the Council of Europe Health Committee, thank you.
You know, what's so interesting about that clip is that was out of 2010. And have you heard much of anything about that since? I know I haven't. And I follow this pandemic and med science vaccination thing pretty closely. I haven't seen a thing about it. So here, let's go back to the CDC. So this is why we should trust them. Oh, yes. This is their security lapses from last year.
On the hot seat right now on Capitol Hill, a subcommittee is grilling Director Tom Fitton about serious safety problems. We're talking accidental anthrax exposure from samples left in unlocked refrigerators. We're also talking about dangerous substances simply stored in Ziploc bags. The government investigation has found widespread problems in labs around the country and a culture of lax safety and sloppy handling.
This is a Ziploc bag. And I have to think, what in heaven's name would go through the minds of some scientists thinking a Ziploc bag is enough to protect someone from anthrax when you have other instances of all that paraphernalia someone has to wear when they're dealing with anthrax. Have you talked to these personnel involved with transporting anthrax and asked them why?
Yeah, not to besmirch Ziploc, but I had the same exact reaction. Joining us to talk about this, our senior medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta. You know, we're not just...
They're wheeling out Gupta.
...talking about the Atlanta headquarters of the CDC here either. There's a range of problems.
And this is what they do. I mean, you know, so we talk about the high standard and how fiery this discussion got. It's in part because they are the gold standard for this sort of thing. And these, there's nothing... everything that could have possibly gone wrong in some of these situations went wrong.
And they are the gold standard. They are the ones that are determining your safety. They are the ones that are declaring emergencies. They are the ones who are deciding what you're going to get injected with. And they're carrying shit like anthrax around in Ziploc baggies and are complete and utter nincompoops. I just have to keep calling them that because that's all they are. Don't trust these people.
Had transport problems putting this in Ziploc bags. Refrigerators were not locked. You had people going through these corridors piggybacking. So someone swipes the card, they have access and they've been trained. Someone comes in the door after them that has not had the same training. So there were all sorts of lapses. What is interesting, John, is that there's been these lapses in the past as well. They've been part of Inspector General reports about the CDC, but they didn't rise to this level until there was... You know, you saw the problems, the anthrax, the flu, the smallpox.
But these are the guys, again, who are supposed to be protecting us from this.
Yeah. So how nice that this stuff isn't being protected at all. But hey, guess what? If it gets out and there's some sort of pandemic, hey, don't worry about it. There's billions of dollars that have gone into all of these new untested remedies for the different pathogens that could come out of this. All right. I had one more clip I wanted to play. The DOD is shocked by the failures in their anthrax handling as well. And this comes a year later after the grilling and the reports out of the CDC.
Now, this review taught us lessons we needed to learn. We were quite frankly surprised by them. They identified institutional and procedural failures we urgently need to address. We are shocked by these failures. I want to stress to you that DOD takes full responsibility for these failures. We are implementing changes and recommending the establishment of procedures, processes, and protocols that will prevent such a biohazard safety failure from ever happening again. Now, until all of these recommendations are addressed in place, and Undersecretary Kendall has told me that they have been addressed, I have directed a moratorium on a continued moratorium on the production, handling, testing, and shipment of inactivated anthrax.
Wow, phew.
There was no findings of malfeasance or wanton, you know, misuse of protocols. It was the protocols themselves that were at fault.
Yes, the protocols themselves. The procedure for inactivating anthrax, which is on the top of the list of some of the biological weapons on their emergency project BioShield list. And this whole time, their entire procedure of irradiating the anthrax before they sent it to labs all over the world, whoops, didn't kill them all. Oh, well.
But the thing that stood out for us at Dugway was that a fairly large proportion of the samples that they had irradiated turned out to be positive in their testing, about 20% when we looked at the records. That should have been a clear indication to people at Dugway that something was wrong.
Yes, you'd think.
The number should be much, much, much lower than that.
Yes, so 20% of all samples were not killed. And then I ran across, actually I lied, there's one more clip. I ran across something yesterday. Thank goodness the CDC is looking out for our best interest, because the CDC is now ramping up high-tech food safety testing. Yes, so don't worry about it, FDA, USDA, because the CDC is going to ramp up high-tech food safety testing.
Washington, D.C. farmers market. The food looks good, but is it safe? From farmers markets to supermarkets across the country, some shoppers are worried.
The worry is getting more. People are beginning to worry more, being more concerned, because it's more in the news.
I'm normally very confident in the safety of the food I'm buying. Certainly if I hear about something in the news, I might be more aware about a particular outbreak.
Worries peaking after this year's listeria outbreak from the Bluebell creameries in Texas, which sickened 10 people in 4 states. Now the nation's disease detectives, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, are expanding a pilot program to try to combat food poisoning outbreaks by decoding the DNA of potentially deadly bacteria and viruses.
Wow, that makes me feel great. The CDC now is doing genomics on potentially deadly bacteria and viruses. I mean, don't think that they haven't been working on this before, but now it's official.
When we started this pilot project, we were testing all the listeria strains from sick people here at CDC. Moving forward this month, we are going to begin the process of transferring this technology to state health departments with 10 pilot states.
So state health departments now are going to be able to do DNA testing themselves.
Food poisoning is deadly and costly. The CDC says about 48 million get sick every year from it, and about 3,000 die. The initial testing target, listeria, the third leading cause of death from food poisoning.
We are finding 3 times as many outbreaks as we found before, and we're finding them when they're smaller.
With genome sequencing becoming faster and cheaper, the CDC...
I mean, but I think it might have just reconnected. Well, that was interesting. That hasn't happened to me in a really long time, so let me back it up for one more second.
Totally different places are infected with exactly the same bacteria. If we can figure out what it is that they have in common and show that, yes, that was the source of the infection, we can find an outbreak even when it's very small.
In the next few years, the CDC plans to roll out whole genome sequence technology to more states, covering more germs.
They're going to roll out whole genome sequencing technology to health departments in all the different states because, hey, you know what? It's for your own good. It's for your own safety. And we got all this taxpayer money that we can sprinkle all over. And let's just hope there isn't an outbreak because we can just fast track everything without any testing whatsoever to vaccinate you.
In the future, we'll begin doing it for E. coli, which is somewhat more common. And within 2 years, we plan to do it for Salmonella, which is very common.
Genome sequencing also promises to reveal drug resistance more quickly, how virulent a germ is, and to track how it's spreading from one person to another through tiny genetic changes that act like footprints. Tracy Brown, Associated Press.
So that just gets me so excited. I am glad that they're going to roll out at the taxpayer expense genome sequencing to all the states where they are working on databases for you and me. And just remember who is responsible for the beginnings of the CDC. And I never really got into the history, but let's look at this really quick while I have about a minute or so left. The Communicable Disease Center was founded July 1st, 1946 as a successor to World War II's Malaria Control in War Areas program of the Office of National Defense Malaria Control Activities. Preceding its founding, the organization with global influence in malaria control were the Malaria Commission of the League of Nations and the Rockefeller Foundation. The Rockefeller Foundation greatly supported malaria control, sought to have governments take over its efforts, and collaborated with the agency. 1947, the CDC made a token payment of $10 to Emory University for the 15 acres that they still sit on now in DeKalb County, and it's still the CDC headquarters today. Employees collected the money to purchase it, and the benefactor behind the gift was Robert W. Woodruff, chairman of the Coca-Cola Company. And we're going to leave it at that. We got about 5 seconds left. All right, it's Thursday. Make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up next at 7 p.m. Eastern tonight. Mr. Ron Steven is live with Game On at 8. Hal Anthony at 10. Double Crossed with Chuckin at 11. Intermediate Radio with SM Gibson. All right, guys, have an awesome show.